Hey, hey, Podnutians. Welcome to Mini PC Show number 72. This is Door to Door Geek doing a solo show. Rich might pop in before the show ends, which will be greatly appreciated. But I'm going to do my best to handle this show. If you're watching this show live, which you can if you are a Patreon member or you're in our Mattermost or Discord server, you can watch these shows live. If you cannot afford a Patreon pledge, do not hesitate. Shoot me an email, minipcshow@podnuts.com, and I will get you a link to those servers so you can watch them and partake. Okay, really quick, just one news / email I got. I just wanted to address. It was a article on CNX software where there was a couple things that lined up that happened that turned out to be, let's just say, like a false flag. CHIP are the people that make the C period H period I period P period. The company's called Next Thing. People were afraid that they were basically out of business. If you looked on Google Maps, it said Next Thing, located in Oakland, California, was closed, like out of business closed. It turned out to be just a series of unfortunate events and nothing else, which to me is a very good thing. Competition is what drives everything, especially in mini computers. I don't want to say CHIP was the best company out there. I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt, CHIP was not the worst company out there. They tried to innovate. They tried to do it at a very reasonable rate as well. Shipping is something that we always have to pay. It's never free. So their $9 computer was typically, I want to say, around $15. So they're not out of business. Hopefully they continue to innovate. They came out with a couple devices here in the last couple months, maybe 3 or 4 months. They came out with at least one stamp-sized computer, and I just keep hoping that they keep coming out with more things. Let me just make sure really quick that that link is indeed in the show notes. Okay, should be all good now. This is the kind of thing, unfortunately, that happens when you are really connected to the mini PC news cycle. Unfortunately, these kinds of things seem to catch your eye, even though if we would have just waited a couple hours, we would have clearly seen it wasn't true. The whole article is over at cnxsoftware.com. If you want to read up on it and see exactly what happened, why it happened, how it happened. Let's move on to another article. Here's one that I found interesting only because I'm a fan of the hardware manufacturer again. Not all of these mini computers are designed to be affordable, low-end, low-cost solutions. Some of them are, in fact, kind of engineered to be the exact opposite, more of a higher-end solution, and some of them really just fit a niche. This is one that I have hands-on experience with the company, Solid Run. They've been doing mini computers for at least a couple years. They're out of Israel. As far as I can tell, they've been at least kind of successful with their past products. They're the ones that had the Q-Box, C-U-B-O-X. I talked about it multiple times in previous episodes. It was one of the mini computers that had very good custom distributions designed for it. We've said multiple times in this show, hardware is literally only half of the user experience. The other half of that experience is how optimized, how engineered, how efficient is their operating system and their software. And I can tell you with very positive confidence that their OS and software, from my experience, was very well crafted, very well maintained, very well written. All of their drivers seem to work really good. With our coming out with a brand new mini computer here, on the horizon. It's not out yet. It is the Q-Box Plus, which I will say I'm a big fan of this form factor. I am a little slightly scared of the price of this device. Q-Boxes are not low-end cheap devices. People expect this device to be, I want to say, on the high end, around $210, $220, on the low end, about $150, I believe, was their expectations. Let me see if I can find some hardware specs. Okay, on the high end, QBox Pulse, quad 1.3 gigahertz NXP IMX8 chip, 2 gigs of RAM, 8 gigs of onboard eMMC, Bluetooth Wi-Fi built in. They're expecting it between $190 and $210. Again, this is a 2x2x2-inch microcomputer. It is going to have more ports and more things than just that. This is just the most poignant specs that they have. They expect 12 weeks for shipping. I don't believe you can technically buy it yet, but it is going to be launched here any day. Hey, Rich.
Hey, Dor. How's it going?
Going fairly well. How about yourself?
Absolutely peachy.
I take that as being very good. Do you have any mini PC events happen to you here in the last week?
Well, in the last week, I gotta, you know, say one of the predictions I made earlier this year, I don't know if it was the January episode, didn't come true.
That is...
I did get a Rock 64 from my boss.
Well, yes, but in typical fashion, I was far too lazy to take what I had and stick it in the mailbox. Well, and here's the kicker. I realized when I said, okay, I got to get this to him. I didn't have a power supply to give you. And the last thing I want to do is say, here's a piece of silicon that you can't use until you get a power supply. So I said, well, if I'm going to order a power supply from them and get it shipped to you, I might as well just do the whole damn Rock 64. So that's what I did. And it was, I think, total for all three, because I believe I sent you a Wi-Fi module, their officially supported Wi-Fi module, a power brick, and the Rock 64 was just over $60, which I still think is a very fair price for a device such as it is.
Yeah, and I think so too. And I got a couple of things. I'm unprepared, and forgive me all. I just got out of work, and so I only stayed there like 4 or 5 hours later than my normal quitting time. So what I wanted to talk about was a comparison between the Odroid XU4 and the Rock 64, but unfortunately I'm not able to do that. The Rock is just really nice. I'm so thrilled with it. It will fit Raspberry Pi cases, and there's an asterisk on that. You gotta open up the port where the power is, so depending on what material your case is made out of, it may or may not be too easy. And on one side, there's a IR sensor, so you gotta, you know, drill a hole for that also. So if it's a super tight case, you're gonna have to relieve some areas, but it will fit in a Raspberry Pi case. Yeah, and I threw Diet Pi on it, and if you guys sub my channel or go to flyingrich.com, you can see I did a video. The Diet Pi image, so they're up to like 162 or 6.2, as they call it.
163 got released today. And so, like, you know, this is how Diet Pi is. As soon as you think you're up to date, you're not.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All right. So right after the show, I'm going to update then, because two things. Dor and I have been talking about the issues. A couple of things. So first off, let me fit the problem with, and I did tweet the guys, and I tweeted them my video. That's the only way I know to get a hold of the Diet Pi guys. So they haven't tweeted me back and said, okay, we're fixing it on the next release or anything. They usually do something like that. It didn't expand the root partition. So when it booted, you know, everything booted fine. Just, you can use the Pine installer. I was originally trying the, what the heck is it called? What's the generic installer called? Etcher.
Etcher, yes. I couldn't think of it.
Yeah, there's a generic version of Etcher, that multi-platform, and then there's the Pine 64, but the Pine version of Etcher. And you pick your device, and then you pick the OS you want to load, and if it's not listed there, you got a file browser, and you can load whatever OS you want that you downloaded. So I tried it both with the, you know, 5X version of Diet Pi and the 6X version of Diet Pi, and both on the Rock 64 did not expand the root file system. So what I ended up doing is just mounting the SD card in a carrier and dropping it in my unibody MacBook Pro that I have Ubuntu on in Gparted and just, you know, expanding the root file system. And then everything was fine. So super happy with that. When it's plugged in, you know, it's got a gigabit Ethernet port. It's super snappy fast, which I'm very happy with. And I'm not sure about how hot is hot. You know, when I feel the chip, it didn't seem to be real hot. Oh, before I get to the hardware issue on it. The other thing is what I was all sorts of happy about, and I threw it up on, on Google Drive, was like my standard install. So there's a dietpy.txt file. You can specify username, password, you know, machine name, what packages you want installed, what default passwords you want used for those packages, because everything is like root and dietpy is the default, and you can specify whatever you want. I didn't see that on the Rock version. And, you know, usually that's in a DOS partition, and there's a dietpy.txt. So once you burn the SD image, usually you can just go in and edit that and then plug it in your machine and walk away. So you could even specify Wi-Fi. So maybe you're going to do like a headless install. You could just put the Wi-Fi, you know, SSID and password in, and the thing would just boot up and connect, and you'd be good, and you could SSH to it. So I couldn't find that. I don't know where that is or what's going on with that. And then the other thing I noticed, so after, right now I have a Raspberry Pi 3, that I'm running as my Plex server, so Plex, radar, sonar, transmission. And that's kind of my default comparison. So I threw, you know, Plex, radar, sonar, transmission on the ROC 64, and I run the CPU command, and I notice it's a little warm, and you can set max, I think it's dietpy-config, you can set the maximum CPU speed, which it's 1200 megahertz, or is it 1.2? Anyhow, whatever it is, it's 1200 is the default. I set it to 1000, and the temperature seemed to be better. Now, this is very preliminary, so everybody's mileage will vary, depends on what you're doing with it, how it's working, blah. I did drop a heatsink on it, and, you know, this is one of the things I've noticed in the past, and Doors helped me a lot with this, is understanding that some boards run cooler with different operating systems. So if you're having an issue with heat on your board, maybe you don't have the right OS.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer that, you know, with a properly configured kernel modules and everything, these boards should run fine. Because the Orange Pis are the classic examples. I think that there's just not enough time put into those kernels and those drivers for them to run successfully. Really quick. On my ROC 64, I'm using my eMMC that came from my Pine book, and flashing the official partition, OS, Ubuntu Mate OS to that eMMC via their tool, I'm showing 7 partitions.
Yep.
Which I've never seen before. One is loader, which is less than 4 megs. 2 is reserved 1, which is 64K. 3 is reserved 2, which is 4 megs. 4th is loader 2, 4 megs. 5th is ATF, unknown 4 megs. 6th is boot, which is, I'm guessing, for UEFI kind of thing. And then there's the final root partition. Mine did expand, but to have 7 partitions kind of, you know, unsettles me.
Yeah, DiaPi did the same thing. I was kind of surprised at that also.
Yeah, I have to believe that there's something going on the board, how the BIOS is, because there's no BIOS. So the firmware that handles it, I'm guessing this has to interact with that. I will say also, mine has been running around 45 to around 48, even with the Firefox open, monitoring this chat, with my terminal open, my Gparted open, it's still hitting 45. And I will say it was a bit tricky to figure out how to get the temps showing, because the normal Linux LM sensor package did not discover any of the sensors properly. So I had to resort to running some other cat commands in order to get the actual temp. But my temp seems to be okay, is what I'm going to say.
Cool. Yeah, I'm very likely going to try and all right, so after the show, I'm going to upgrade and see how my temps are, see how everything's going. The wired performance on that, even the boot in booting off the micro SD is fast. Compared to other micro, single board computers that I've used. So I'm very excited about this. I think this has a stinkload of potential. And as much as I've raved about the Odroid XU4 in the past, this may be my new fave. The only thing I can think of that this doesn't have with respect to the Odroid is it just has a single USB 3.0 port. And I did plug, I've got an adapter. It's a Gigabit Cat 5 adapter, and it has three USB 3 ports on it also. So I plugged that in. And again, this is all very preliminary, so I don't have a long-term test report on it. But very happy with everything so far.
Yeah, I don't want to say it's a shortcoming, but so many boards don't even have one USB 3. One, it makes me at least not complain about it, but more is better. If they could have flipped it and had two USB 3 and one USB 2, I would have definitely been much happier. But I'll say for now, I guess I'm going to just say I'm okay with that. I'm going to end up connecting a external 500 gig USB 3 drive to it, just see what kind of speeds I get out of it. Because that's one thing I have not tested on this device is how fast is that USB 3 port. Just because it says USB 3 doesn't mean you get full USB 3 speeds.
Yep. Yeah, never take them at their word. And when we're done beating this up, let me know, because I got another USB 3 topic I want to talk about. The other thing that I tried out, so I have, and I like these things. These are really good. USB 3 to Cat 5 gigabit Amazon Basics adapters. They're super reasonably priced. I don't have hard numbers, but they seem to work real well. They do have two LEDs on it, which I super like. And, this way you can see what speeds and, activity. But the one I mentioned before, the one that has the gigabit Ethernet and USB hub with three ports, or the Amazon Basics, neither of them with the Diet Pi version, let me talk straight, 162, recognize the additional Cat 5 port. So initially I thought, hey, this would be cool. I mean, you could run routing, firewalling, blah, blah, blah. Just plug another USB 3.0 port Cat 5 adapter in, and that'd be it. But not exactly so.
Yeah, I wouldn't have expected that. Yeah, and I'll just say, if anybody out there has any test that they would like us to run on this board, anything you would like us to stress test on it, you got to let us know. We can only think of the things that we think of. And so far, I'm enjoying it as a supplemental desktop. I think that's my new term now, Rich.
I like that.
I have my normal desktop running, and it's a good supplemental desktop. And what I mean by that is I launch things on it, and I don't have to stare at this screen waiting for them to finish loading, because they're not going to be instantaneous. You know what I mean? This is a less than $60 mini computer. But I have to reinforce what I'm paying for it, bang for the buck. This thing does seem to be among the best. And I still really like the Odroids, do not get me wrong. I'm with you. I think they each have different use cases. That one, I think, has a slightly better processor and, processor programming, processor modules, processor drivers. But the ROG 64, the one that I got for you and myself, has 4 gigs of RAM, which means it's going to be able to handle certain loads just better, period.
Yeah, 4 gigs of RAM. I mean, that's definitely the cat's meow. I am really excited to, get into this a little further, a little deeper, and, really, really dig into it to see how good it performs.
What other topics did you want to talk about with USB 3?
Okay, so something I've kind of, always given mad love to, I've got the Up Squared, and I was moving files from one external USB 3 drive to another, and it just seemed to take forever. Now, again, this isn't a scientific or definitive test, but I've plugged other USB 3 devices in and moved files around, and I don't know if it's my OS and the hardware combination or just the hardware ain't cutting it, whether it says it's USB 3 and just not performing at that level. I was a little bummed because something else I put a 256 meg, yeah, is it meg? 256 gig, sorry, thumb drive in, and I was copying a 50 gig file off over the Cat 5, and it just took an extreme amount of time. So I was kind of surprised at the throughput issues that I was having. But right now I have both of those USB 3 drives plugged into that USB 3 hub that's plugged into the ROC chip, the ROC 64. So we'll see how that goes, if I have the same issues or not. The reason I have two USB 3 drives is one of my drives is, you know, slowly failing.
Well, I mean, it's better to know it's failing than to have it all of a sudden fail. Did you say what OS you were running on that UpSquared?
I believe I'm running whatever Ubuntu it originally had. So it's, you know, a 16.04 version.
Gotcha. How often do you run to check for updates on that device, or does it prompt you?
I'm probably behind on updates. I'm probably like 9 months behind on updates, or maybe not that long. It's probably not 9 months that I've had it.
Gotcha. I was just wondering what was the frequency of updates, because I have Ubuntu on my desktops, I have Ubuntu on a laptop, and I have Ubuntu on the ROC 64. And I will say there are plenty of times where I run all three of them. I run for updates, and then the very next day I run all three for updates. And sometimes on the second day, only one or two out of those three will have updates. So I'm just worrying slightly about the update frequency on that, because because it could just be drivers haven't been worked on, haven't been tweaked, haven't been fine-tuned. Somebody just put them in there and said, well, it's good enough, which unfortunately could happen to any company of any size. But I would hope that Upboard at least has somebody working as a side thing, keeping those drivers at least squeaky clean.
Yep. Yeah, oh, and just kind of reaching back to the ROC chip, the combination that I'm running right now with the Wi-Fi dongle, Diet Pi, the Wi-Fi performance doesn't seem too hot. In fact, it seems kind of brutally slow. So, again, not purely scientific, but that's just, I noticed when I was wired, you know, Cat 5 wired to it, it was crazy fast. And just loading the Plex home screen Wi-Fi took forever. So there's maybe some driver issues with that, with the combination that I have running.
Did you run any site or software to do any kind of speed test? Because I want to say the one I trust right now, which of course is all relative, I want to say it's fast.com, which is actually a Netflix own subsidiary, because my logic is if they're going to slow down any website in the universe, it's going to be fast.com. I'll say on almost every Linux-based desktop mini computer I've ever used, and I used Wi-Fi, I'm lucky to get like 12 meg speed. And on the same device, if I load Android on it, I sometimes see four times that speed.
Oh, wow.
Which, yeah, I'm not going to lie, shocks me. But at the same token, I know this just cements my idea of, you know, the hardware is only half of it. OS is the other half.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So one more thing, being that I am not at the Hughes Compound Southern Command, and I am about an hour away from Detroit, or hour and a half away from Detroit, which means there's a micro center nearby when I go to visit a buddy, I picked up 7 Pi Zero W's.
Oh my.
Yeah, they basically said, if you get back on the line, we'll let you buy another one. We won't chase you out of the store. I didn't do that. I came back the next day, like I stayed overnight at a friend's, and then he went in with me and all that bit. So yeah, so I got like 7 now. I probably have to give a couple away.
Well, part of me keeps saying I want to do some kind of mini computing cluster once, just so I can say
that's,
I did it
that's
once.
One of the things I was thinking about, I'm like, oh, where are those cluster cases to print? Because I'm pretty sure I saw a Pi Zero cluster case.
Well, and I do think, unfortunately, for Pi Zeros to do clustering, you do need just a touch more hardware. And that hardware was to be able to take the two micro USB sockets and connect them to basically a fatherboard thus to do the power and networking between the devices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember seeing something like that.
Yeah, to me, it's like one of those rite of passage things that we all just need to do it just once, at least once we can say we did it. And then if we find some kind of genuine use for it, then that's even better.
So the Pi-0W Beowulf cluster?
Why not? Should work. and yeah, I have had in the past multiple Raspberry Pi 3s, I think 3 at one time. Right now, I have 2 Rock 64s. You can't do, okay, here's one of the things. Correct me if I'm wrong, Rich. You can technically never do a actual proper cluster with 2 computers. You always need one as the master and then at least have 2 other ones as the children to have a true cluster.
Best that I know, yes. Trying to think of, there are some systems where there's an election, but yeah, you still have a master, basically. They're still electing a master.
And I'll say, to me, the idea of a cluster is the perfect scenario, I guess I'll say, to use something like Docker, so you can craft a ecosystem just once, and then you can easily and cleanly clone it out to multiple systems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think there is Docker for the Pi. I haven't played with it yet.
I do believe Kubernetes, okay, long story short, for years, literally, I want to say 3 years, I said how Docker is a future in computing. You know what I mean? If you want to know where things are going, learn Docker, learn Docker. Docker isn't dead, but Docker is absolutely suffering in popularity in comparison with Kubernetes. Kubernetes seems to be taking the helm, I think primarily because it has both support from Red Hat, Google, and I believe Facebook, all 3.
Wow.
So, you know, how can you keep up with that kind of publicity? And I do believe there are multiple ways to do Kubernetes instances on many computing devices, ARM devices. I still think that it suffers from the same stigma that Docker had, which is there's 2 ways you can build design containers. There's the architecture specific container, then there's the non-specific container, and the architecture specific containers require much less work to set up and get running. So most developers and admins opt for that version because they know it's going to work on their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which just means if you want to take your typical container and put it on ARM, you're either going to have to redevelop it from scratch or you're going to have to find a ARM specific version of it to run. And I'm sure the library of ARM containers is much less than the x86 one. Okay, were there any other links in the notes that jumped out to you?
Yes, there was. That's why I'm breaking my glasses out. Let's see. It was the list. You didn't read it already, did you?
I don't know.
Let's see, I saw it, but I think it reshuffled.
Was it the one of the best Raspberry Pi correct alternatives? I'm going to say no, I did not read it, but I've seen many people write similar named articles.
I thought it was a decent, you know, there's like one or two, I'm like, really? You know, but I thought it was a decent article.
Well, and to me, they're all equally, man, I'm going to sound like a Special Olympics kind of guy. They're all equally as good. They all have their own use case. They all have their own specialty. If you want support from the majority, if you want huge communities, if you want a plethora of different software packages and custom tutorials to hold your hand through stuff, you cannot even remotely compete with a Raspberry Pi. But if you need faster networking, or you need faster USB, or you need SATA built on the board, or you need something physically smaller, there's always different solutions in the world. So what I'll say is there is no real competitor to the Raspberry Pi. To me, it's almost like podcast. There's no real competing podcast. There's enough room in this ocean for them all to survive. And I'll say it's the same thing about all these mini computers. Some of them you get what you pay for. Some of them are cheap and they should be cheap. Some of them are overpriced, like the Tinkerboard. And if you think it's the right solution for you, then hop on it. But Odroid seems to me right now to be one of the best bang for the buck, along with Pine. Pine 64 is a larger form factor board, but very capable. and this Rock 64 is ultra capable. So there really is no shortage, I'll say. And I'm really shocked they actually mentioned the Orange Pi Lite 2 in this article.
That's what I'm looking at. That was the one I was like, what?
Okay, now, this is funny. This is ZDNet, and I'm going to say right now, Nick Heath didn't spend more than 15 seconds with an Orange Pi 2 Lite up and running. There's no way. I will stake a full paycheck of mine on the fact he has not even ran one for more than 30 seconds, or else it would not be in his list.
Yeah, I hate to say it, as much as I'm enjoy the Orange Pi in the niche that it's in, I didn't even recognize the board. I'm like, what the heck board is that?
Yeah, Orange Pi Lite 2. I cannot say it's one of the ones I recognize, but also I'm going to say because it's $25, that might be maybe the reason we have a tendency at least to focus on the lesser priced Orange Pi boards.
All right, so there's a couple of things with any kind of board, and just Orange Pi, I'm sorry, Orange Pi, Raspberry Pi 3, you know, whatever the current Raspberry Pi is, I think that's the de facto standard. If you're going to start doing this stuff and playing with them, get a Raspberry Pi 3. You're going to have a much easier entry into the hobby. So to make something run, you're going to need a power supply, depending on what it is, you know, whether it's going to have micro B USB, or it's going to be some round Canon connector. You're going to have some sort of power supply. You may have something you can use at home, or you may have to buy it. You're going to need an SD card on some things. Some may have eMMC on board, and you can use the SD card to get the image over there, and after that you can use it for something else, depending on how it's programmed. So if the Raspberry Pi is coming from China and you got to pay Raspberry Pi, Orange Pi is coming from China and you got to pay shipping on it, that may tack more money onto it. So it's the difference of going to a micro center if you have one in your neighborhood, or getting it from Amazon at a decent price, versus picking up one of these Orange Pis and, you know, you're already up to Raspberry Pi cost. Unless, like Dor said, if there's a niche, whatever, for the device, you know, whether you really need an H6 processor or you really need some feature that's on board, then that may be reason to justify it. But saying, hey, it's $25, I'm going to pay $7 for shipping, and I could have just got a Raspberry Pi 3 on the corner for $30, that might not be the best move.
Yeah, and the one thing I cannot tell on this AliExpress web page is when was this page posted and when was it updated, kind of thing, because they showed as being $25 each for one, but it very, very, very clearly, I'm pretty sure, contradicts this guy's posting, because it says in very clear, big, bold letters with an asterisk surrounding it, we only have Android 7.0 images for OPI Lite 2 now. Linux images are under test, and will be uploaded soon. So you can only run Android 7 on it. Android on a gig of RAM, which this board has, will be an extremely underwhelming experience, is what I'll say. So I don't know how someone could suggest this. I mean, yes, it has HDMI, SD card, no eMMC. It does have micro USB for power, which I don't understand how they offer USB 3, because reading the specs of USB 3, a micro USB cannot supply enough power for that socket. So I don't know how the hell they're doing that, unless, of course, it's just a blue socket that they call USB 3, but it's not.
Well, it may not provide the power that's to the spec. And, you know, if they had asterisk does not provide full USB 3 power, but does, you know, full USB 3 data rate, that'd be different.
Yes, that would make me feel better, I'll say. What I will say is it has a good form factor. I really do like this form factor. It has less pins. It has 26 pins versus the 40 on the Pi, which that makes me a little bit worried if you're used to the Pi thing. The one thing about the oranges that I like is when they offer you Wi-Fi, they actually offer you a little clippable Wi-Fi antenna. Now, it probably won't really help your speeds in with any dramatic numbers, but I have to believe a physical thing that you can move around will give you better Wi-Fi performance than just a chip sitting embedded in a board.
I've seen YouTube videos of tests on the Orange Pis, you know, whatever Orange Pi X, let's just say, with the clippable antenna, and the clippable antenna versus no antenna versus a third-party antenna. Their antenna works best, has the best performance and data rate.
Gotcha. And so it has a H6 quad-core 64-bit ARM Cortex A53 processor with GPU Mali T720. T720 is on a whole lot of stuff. 1 gig of RAM, which makes me feel better about it. But that 1 gig of RAM is shared with the GPU. And most of the time in Android, I never see a way to edit how much RAM is shared with the video. I know on certain Raspberry Pi type things, you can load Raspbi config and you can allocate more or less RAM to the GPU, but I've never seen that in Android. Except for that, I mean, I don't see anything on this device that would make me really want to buy it, especially when all you can run right now on it is Android. I believe I could spend a very comparable amount of money, especially after shipping, and probably see better results.
Yeah, and so here's the one word of advice. And before there was the Pi Zero W, I was really liking the Orange Pi Zeros because they had Wi-Fi built on. There are a couple of good use cases for them. But one word of warning with anything Orange Pi is when it shows you all of the operating systems available, don't count on them all working.
Yeah, and the ones that do work, you're probably also best to invest in a heatsink. And Joe Heck from Google Plus and everything, one of the things I believe he said, and I do believe there is a lot of truth to it, a heatsink alone on these devices will do little to affect the overall heat. What is more important, or just as important as a heatsink, is to have some kind of moving air above or on that heatsink. If you can get a moving air source, I think you would see much better results with than to only have a heatsink on it.
So in the Use Compound Southern Command data center in a drawer, I have a 100mm fan pointing at the Pi devices. So that even the Odroid XU4, because one, I want to move air around in the cabinet because there's a number of devices there. But, you know, right in front of the fan are my Pi devices with heat sinks on them.
Yeah. And everyone who's ever worked inside of any data center, they know and they understand and they honestly expect these kinds of things going on. But if you have not worked in a data center before, active cooling means actual moving air, and active cooling is a very important part of the actual cooling process.
Yeah, just the short of it is you're taking electric, the electric is doing something, you know, some sort of computing or whatever, and a byproduct of that is also heat, and you got to dissipate that heat.
Yeah, until our electronics become 100% efficient, which everyone says will never happen, but if it could, then we would have no excess heat come off those devices. But because nothing is 100% efficient, we are always going to have heat coming off any electric device whatsoever. Even if it's only a little tiny amount, over time, it will only get more and more, kind of thing. Okay, on my Rock 64, I had Firefox open with the YouTube link in it, watching everything going on, and that tab crashed on me. But it soft crashed where I got a little clickable button that said reload tab. So,
oh, the tab. Okay.
Yeah. So that I don't mind.
That's okay.
Yeah. I didn't really spot anything else in the notes that I saw. But the one thing I will mention is we just had Mobile World Congress like a week ago. Mobile World Congress is one of the few corporate bigger events that have any effect on mini computing whatsoever, and I will say it doesn't look good in my opinion for to see the same rate of innovation in mini PCs for the next year and a half, 2 years, based upon what we saw at Mobile World Congress. There was nothing innovative, nothing worthwhile, nothing interesting, nothing exciting, nothing remarkable, nothing that shocked people, nothing that drew any actual tension for being anything technically innovative. All we saw were a couple of stupid phones with iPhone notches.
I was gonna say that. Yeah.
Well, and it's weird because the stupid thing is Android actually had the notch first, but it
doesn't matter.
I don't care. It's still stupid and sucks. We saw a Asus phone with an insane battery in it. We saw new Samsung devices that were unbelievably not remarkable compared to last year's models. And then we did see a couple laptops, Chromebooks, but they're not mini computers. We saw the MateBook X, which I gotta say is one of the most desirable physical looking laptops I've seen in quite a long time. Don't know if Linux can even be installed on it. And then we saw a Dell school education Chromebook that was basically ruggedized, and it was less than, I want to say, $280.
Oh, wow.
So I think we're going to have to rely on our own ecosystem to see differences made in the mini PC arena, whether it be Odroid, whether it be Pine, whether it be Chip, whether it be Raspberry Pi, whether it be somebody. We're going to have to rely on them to do some self-innovation. And if history is any example, and if history is at all accurate about this, do not hold your breath, anybody out there waiting on the Raspberry Pi Foundation to do anything exciting, is what I'll say. I do expect this year sometime, hopefully, a new Raspberry Pi to come out, but I expect it literally to just be a rev cycle.
And, you know, that I would be hoping for, like, USB 3. Like, say there's a Raspberry Pi 3, you know, whatever the current rev would be. I don't know if they're currently called Bs or not, but if it had USB 3.0 on it, or Gigabit Ethernet, those would be big features. Or RAM upgrade.
Right. Well, first off, it should be called the Raspberry Pi 3.14, but that's just me.
Right.
There's three things to me they could do, and you nailed them. Faster networking, faster storage interface, or more RAM. The processor, I don't think, is a huge stumbling block on their base model. Sure, they could rev the processor up to it. It ain't going to hurt anything, but the bigger things are those three. If they do, I severely doubt they're going to bump all three. If history is any example, they'll only bump one or two of them. The only place I could see them rev and it actually be interesting will be on the Raspberry Pi Zero. I do expect that to be a quad core in the next version. And then I truly think that Zero is going to be in a lot more people's small projects just because it will be able to do so much more.
If there was a Pi Zero W quad core, that would be crazy good.
Yeah, and I could see people literally just going a little bit crazy, wanting to put them inside things. Because right now, the realm of mini handheld computers, mini handheld gaming systems, the Raspberry Pi Zero does seem to completely own that market. With that said, because of it being a Zero, means there's definite limitations on what you can and cannot emulate. Putting a quad core would definitely help that genre of computers out a lot.
Yeah, that would definitely make your Beowulf cluster of Pi Zeros more attractive if you had a quad core.
Very cool, very cool. Just looking back on the notes, and I'm not really seeing a whole lot, I'll say. The only one other thing I want to just throw out there, Rich, and this one's up on the notes back a little ways, line 606. The only reason I'm mentioning it on this show is because it has the word modular in it, and I think of mini computers, modularity is one of the things that I think go towards mini computing kind of things. And what this is advertised as is a do-it-yourself, open-source, hardware and software, hacker-friendly, modular laptop. And that's a hell of a lot of words, first and foremost. They don't need that many words. But I will say, because one of the dreams that we had, at least me, had when the Pinebook announced their laptop was that it would be in some way upgradable, just some way. Yes, you can upgrade the MMC, sure, and technically that means it's upgradable, but we wanted a little bit more to be upgradable. This ships as a kit. This is not a assembled product. Right now, €240, which I believe makes it over $300 US. I will say I like the idea of this. This is using a quad-core all winner A53 processor, which I don't think is horrible by any sense of the word, but I'm not sure that would really be enough to really be a great mobile experience. And like, there's no pictures of the board itself, and I can't find any actual examples of what the board inside of it is. But it says it has 2 gigs of RAM. The LCD is 11.6 inch, 1366 by 768. So it's a very low res compared to what a lot of people are expecting. 16 gigs of eMMC flash, which is fine. Wi-Fi 150 megabit. I have no idea what the hell that's even supposed to mean. Bluetooth 4.0, which is a newer standard. I do believe we're up to 5. It does say it has a camera, HDMI 2 USB, just because it says USB, USB 2.0, not 3.0. Built-in stereo audio, hopefully better than the Pinebook speakers, just saying.
Ouch.
I know. I like everything about that as a portable, low-budget solution, but those speakers were really bad.
They were awful.
Yeah, and it does say it has a 3.5 audio head jack, stereo out, microphone in, so it's one of those combo jacks. 9,500 milliamp battery. Don't know how much battery life you'll see with that. With a 11.6 inch screen, I'm going to guess not, you know, 10 plus hours. And it does have a barrel connector for the power. So I'm going to try to see if I can do a little bit more digging and figure out what kind of board is actually in this thing. But I'm going to guess I'm not going to find much.
So do you think Pine will do a ROC 64? And the Pinebook in the future, that there's going to be a Pinebook 2.0?
Well, even if it isn't successful, I expect them to have another iteration of the Pinebook. I don't know why they wouldn't try to go with something like the ROC 64, because I will say the hang up, I think, with a lot of that board was the RAM was only 2 gigs on it. And I truly believe for a lot of the things that we use, we need a little bit more than 2 gigs of RAM. I will say, looking at the classification of that ARM Cortex A53, it's very loose. 1 to 4 core, it's an ARM V8A. Okay, in that number, the ARM V, the lower the number, the better. So ARM 8 is actually good. Bad is when you start getting into the 9s and especially the V10s. So I have a little bit of hope that this is a moderate processor. I'm going to keep trolling internet, have my Google alert turned on for this device, see if I can find people talking about it, see if I can find somebody who actually has one, because there is no way I would spend €240 on anything without being pretty confident that it's going to be a good device. $297 is the translated price.
And, you know, here's the thing. Costco was selling Celeron Chromebooks for $200, like 14 or 15 inch Celeron Chromebooks. I forget what size, for $200. Like, I jump on that.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest reason to buy something like this, in my opinion, is not because, you know, I hate to say it like this, not because of power and not because of anything like that, but it's one, to support the people doing this, that you like the idea of having a open source laptop, but two, you just want to see other people also try to do this. You want to show them that there's a genuine interest in this. And that's what I did with the Pi Top. I paid them $300. I'm not going to say I threw my money away, but I will say, it only worked with the Raspberry Pi 3, nothing else. Couldn't get any other board to ever work in it right without having a crazy purple hue over it, which they either said that they never heard of, or they've never seen before, or nobody else experienced or reported. I don't know. I told them, I said, look, I will send you one of these boards I'm trying to get working in it if you want to devote any time to try to get it to work. and I got a clear definitive that's okay. So yeah, it now just sits there on its side doing nothing. So I guess I was happy I could support them. I don't know. Were there any other things that caught your eye there, Rich?
No, I think that's about it for me.
Okay, next week I am going to be out of town, so if I'll say this openly and with no pressure involved, if Rich and Brian want to hook up and record something, they know how to do it. Just shoot me the files and I'll publish them as soon as I possibly can. Until then, if you have any ideas, if you see any mini computers that you don't hear us talking about, or you have information on mini computers that we didn't know about, do not hesitate. Shoot us an email, minipcshow@podness.com. If you have things you would like us to try to do on these mini computers, do not hesitate. Shoot us at minipcshow@podness.com. I'm always looking for reasons to try things on these mini computers. I'm not what they call a self-starter. So if people ask for things, I'm much more likely to do it. Rich, where can people go if they want to catch up with you?
Well, flyingrich.com is the best place to find me. And that links to my YouTube videos, the podcasts that I'm on, this one, in fact. And, you know, whatever is going on in my social media life.
Very cool, very cool. And I'll ask everyone, do not forget, go to podnuts.com, podnutz.com. Check out the other shows. Feedback is always welcome. First and foremost, Podnuts is normal people doing podcasts for normal people. You will not hear political speak. You will not hear journalistic speak. You will not hear us using kid-like gloves with products. No, we beat up products. We beat up people. We beat up each other. That's what we do best. And with that, I want to thank everyone for their support. If you want to support us again, go to patreon.com/minipcshow. If you want to send us a voicemail, it's 7076-PODNUT. And we will all talk to everyone again real soon.
My name is Jeff Houch. I am the host of PODNUT's The Computer Repair Podcast, where we take live calls on the air to answer your questions on running and operating your computer repair business every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can check it out over at podnuts.com/computer repair podcast live.